Support for this show comes from Art Beats and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Colt Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art Beats and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual past while also revealing their distinct roles within Art Beats and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art Beats and Lyrics now on Hulu. Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.
Welcome back to another edition of NFL University, the show where we educate you on all things across the National Football League landscape. I'm Steven Serta of Arrowhead Pride. NFL University is brought to you by DraftKings. DraftKings Sportsbook is an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use code SBNNFL for a special offer when you sign up. That's code SBNNFL only at the DraftKings Sportsbook. Got a lot to get into. It is kind of slow around the NFL. There's all kinds of Miami Dolphins, Tua Tagovailoa, social media controversy that we're going to discuss. Tom Brady inks a massive record-setting broadcast contract. And then we're going to get into some NFC projected win totals as we head into next season. So let me welcome in Kyle Posey of Niners Nation, as well as Justice Mosqueda of Acme Packing Co. We begin with the Tom Brady broadcast contract. It's reportedly 10 years, $375 million, $37.5 million a year for Tom Brady as soon as he decides to retire, which maybe next season, it might be in 5 years, we don't really know. But he's got a contract waiting for him that is as much or not more than he's actually made in his NFL career, which is absolutely insane.
Yeah, doesn't he have to be like really good right away? Like who are they projecting him to be? They're essentially saying, hey, we know Tony Romo essentially made, you know, this the broadcasters, and you have to be as good as Romo out of the gate and then some with the money that he's getting. And for a while, like that is a long freaking time to give somebody who you just have no idea how he's going to be. I'm sure they did like little test runs, or did they? Or they just say, hey, you're Tom Brady. We're going to give you this money. Go be yourself. But then we like, do we even know who Tom Brady is to say go be yourself? There's so many questions about this where I don't know, man. 10 years is a long, long time, and people can get really tired of somebody really quick. So this can go in a lot of different directions.
Yeah, I feel like there's already backlash to Romo at this point, right? Like the first year it was fun, and then it seems like people are like, damn, buddy, how many of those Coronas are you taking in the booth before you're calling some of these games? I don't know, man. I don't understand Tom Brady in the booth, really. I always thought he was going to go down the road of, like the health and wellness. Like, you know, just we're trapping these products, right? But buy my frozen meals. They're definitely not TV dinners. I thought that was going to be the route we were going to see post-career. I don't know if Brady's going to be interesting in the booth. I mean, I'm sure he's going to have stories, but, like, do we need to hear more about Tom Brady winning a Super Bowl ring? Like, I heard BOG right. talking about it on the podcast yesterday. He's like, I'm done with Tom Brady. I want him gone. I get it. I get it completely. Like, Peyton didn't do this.
I don't know anybody who's actually watched Man in the Arena. Is that, I think that's the name of it. The Tom Brady, like, 10-part documentary propaganda series. And it's just another thing where I understand that the Michael Jordan documentary, like, worked really well, but I haven't heard anybody talk about that documentary. And I feel like it's because Tom Brady's just not that interesting. Like, he is the greatest quarterback of all time, but really until he got to Tampa Bay, he was super boring and never said anything. And now he's opened up a little bit over the last couple of years. And I, in like a conspiracy theory world, I believe that he does not run his Twitter page. Like, everybody raves about how funny he is on Twitter, and I do not think that he does that. I think somebody else runs it for him, because I don't think that he could be that good at Twitter, like, after never having said anything, never showing personality ever in his entire career. So I don't believe that he runs his Twitter page even. But it's a huge risk for Fox, and you know they're filling a huge void, and we're seeing all these insane contract dollars go to these broadcast announcers. I mean, you lock up the biggest name, I guess, for 10 years, but Peyton Manning was just like, no, I don't care how much money you guys offer me. I have no interest in any of this. Leave me alone. And so it is interesting to see that type of investment in Tom Brady. Like, I'm kind of shocked by the numbers on it, to be totally honest.
Yeah, you talk about Romo, and I thought the reason that he got kind of tired or stale is just because he went from, oh, wow, this is new, this is fun, to essentially just throwing shit at the wall and hoping it sticks. Like, that's what he does. He just guesses, and he doesn't even really give analysis anymore. So, like, what's Brady's angle going to be? Like, that's what I'm really fascinated to see. Like, what his angle is, and are people going to be able to relate to it? Like, we don't know what he's going to bring to the table at all, man. Like, is he going to be this X and O guru? Is he just going to be up there, you know, joking around, having fun? Again, a lot of money for the unknown, and he has to be liked well right away. And I don't know that that's him. You talk about the ESPN doc, would love to see those ratings. Would love to know how many true Tom Brady stans there are outside of, you know, the Boston area. And I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's not as high as people think.
I watched like two of them because they had, I can't remember. I don't know if it was on ESPN that they broadcast them or if it was straight to ESPN Plus, but I saw two of them. And it's a lot of like Tom Brady just like calmly explaining how competitively psycho he is. And like, that's fine. There's definitely a place for that. I don't know if I want to hear that in the biggest window for Fox every week when my team plays in the NFC. That's my big.
Don't we already know that know too?
Yeah. And like, the other thing too is, do we need all these quarterbacks in the booth? Do we actually? Because I find guys like the most interesting guy in the booth to me since Romo has been Aqib Talib, right?
Yeah.
He's a DB, and he'll break down like all that stuff, and he'll be funny about it too. Like, I'd be looking for guys with charisma and stuff like that. Like, I don't know. Is Tom Brady really moving the needle? And they also said that he might debut during a Super Bowl. Oh my goodness, if that happened, he lit up like a bottle rocket.
All he's going to do is talk about himself, right? Like, that's all that broadcast is going to be about. Well, like, when I was in the Super Bowl,
the nine times I was here,
right?
I feel like that's part of the problem, too, where we see these generational athletes like try to make that jump. And the guys who haven't been successful at it is because they're not good at explaining the game sometimes because they're so good at seeing it in a different way than everybody else does. They see things that, you know, other players just can't. They do things that other players just can't. And I think that sometimes can make it hard for you to explain it because you're just like, how does everybody else not see that? How does everybody else not make that throw? And like we saw it with Magic Johnson. Like, Magic Johnson is a great personality, really successful businessman outside of his NBA career. But Magic Johnson was not great as a broadcaster. And there's a lot of other NFL players that have struggled to catch on there. So I also am curious, like, is Brady just going to be NFL, or is he going to be like Joe Buck and Aikman where they're putting him all over the place? Because $375 million for a guy, if he's just doing NFL games, that's crazy. And I don't know if Tom Brady realizes what the schedules are like if you're actually doing like every primetime broadcast for Fox, because those dudes are flying everywhere constantly. And I have to imagine Tom Brady does not want to do that once he retires from the NFL.
Well, what, Fox has the rights to Big Ten football, right? I mean, he's a Michigan man, famously.
It's getting worse and worse the more you guys talk about
this. Calling the big game.
He's going to be shoved down our throats, man. So we're going to go from a Monday Night Football, or not Monday Night Football, but we're going to go from like a Sunday broadcast. And again, like, he's probably going to get off to a good start just because he's fresh, just because of the novelty of, you know, Tom Brady. And that's going to spin to Ohio State, Michigan? Like, come on, man. Do we really want that? Who asked for this?
If he's doing double duty, those two weekends with the kids must have gone terribly. Again, he went from I am retired to I am back, also might be a part owner of the Miami Dolphins and might broadcast the Super Bowl.
To I'm going to be home once a month.
Pretty much. He's also still got that production company that when he retired for a couple of weeks, it was like he's got a movie coming out and he's got something else.
I forgot about
documentaries,
the movie.
And like all this stuff. Is he still doing all of that stuff, even though he's going back to play football and now has this television contract? Like, he is trying to just not be a part of his family's life.
When do you think he runs for president? That's the real question, right?
Somewhere. I don't even want to talk about that.
Probably after this 10-year contract, right? So people can see.
There are going to be people who are like, how can you not vote for Tom Brady for president? All he's done is won. Like that's literally how it's going to go. After Dwayne The Rock Johnson is our president, the next one is Tom Brady.
Get me out of here.
Yeah. Now I'm just scared. now I'm concerned. Let's stop talking about Tom Brady.
Please.
So as I mentioned at the start of the show, we're in the middle of the NFL offseason. It's just beginning. It's getting kind of light in the news cycle. And we're all kind of degenerates when it comes to consuming NFL content. So this video clip that the Miami Dolphins chose to tweet out from their account last night of Tua Tagovailoa throwing a deep ball to new wide receiver Tyreek Hill. And it was, you know, I don't remember what the exact caption was, but it was like rocket ship cheetah.
The rocket ship emoji is the important part. Come
on, yeah. And Tyreek Hill had completely stopped, was not running at all. It was a terribly underthrown pass, but it wasn't shorts. He was wearing a bucket hat, if you want to read into any of that. But it is totally consumed Twitter today. It's all everybody's talking about is Tua in this terrible deep ball that he threw to Tyreek Hill.
It looked like he was fielding a punt.
Yes.
Like if you had no idea that Tua threw the ball, you would have thought, oh, cool, Tyreek's going to return punts for the Dolphins. But nope. Tua loaded up, really revved back to let that ball fly. And, I mean, what, it was probably at most 45, 50 yards, and Tyreek had to stop. Not a good sign. If you are the social media intern who tweeted that out, you are probably not going to have privileges to the Miami Dolphins Twitter account anymore. That did not go well. It's not going to – I mean, we all know who Tua is, but just to see that was pretty hilarious. And, I mean, we don't have to go too far into this, but, like, what positive – thing could come from this if you are on the Miami Dolphins side? Like, what were you thinking we were going to how did you think we were going to react to this? Just because it was Tyreek and like, oh, cool, he's catching deep passes. Nope. That was the last thing on everybody's mind from this.
You said we all know who Tua is. Who is we? I feel like the Tuanon stronghold has never been stronger than now because they got reinvigorated with the Tyreek Hill addition. And then now he has a left tackle. So I don't know, man.
What percentage are we talking about here? Because it's like,
I'm talking about in South Florida. Like, it seems like 100%. Like, everyone is still in on Tua.
Yeah. I just like that everybody on Twitter pulled up the one deep pass that he's actually thrown in a game. And
the one against the Ravens. I can tell you which one it is.
Yeah. Yep. It got in it. It didn't even get caught. It was dropped, but
of course it did.
That's the one deep pass I think he's had in an NFL game because he hasn't had very many over 25-yard passes in his NFL career so far, and that's the one that everybody always refers to. And it wasn't even a complete pass.
That was against like backup corners too, mind you. Yeah. You guys forget about that Baltimore team getting all banged up, but yeah, I mean, we'll find out. We'll find out this year. There's no more excuses for Tua, right? Like, he's spoiled with talent around him.
10 for 26 last year on deep passes. Tua. 10 for 26.
I want to see the cut up of the 10.
I would live for that.
I'd just imagine there's not a ton of zip on that ball. Like, I don't think it's getting downfield very quick for Tua. I'm sorry, Dolphins fans, but it has consumed NFL Twitter today, so you can go check that out if you would really like to. But we've got some NFC win totals that we want to discuss. So we begin with the NFC East. And we start with the Dallas Cowboys. Right now, they are listed on DraftKings at a projected win total of 10.5 games. I'm curious how you guys feel about this. It seems high to me for the Dallas Cowboys. And I know they're coming off a good season. They still have Dak Prescott, who is still a very good quarterback. But they're projected right now as the same win total as the Super Bowl champion Los Angeles Rams, and I don't see how the Dallas Cowboys have gotten any better this offseason.
Yeah, that's a good point. And we also have to talk about, well, I'm sure the person speaking after me will talk about their head coach and why that is high, but just Dallas in general, think about it, man. Like, what do we know that they do? They generally speaking, they're underwhelming. So what are you just hoping that Dak stays healthy? Are you hoping that DeMarcus Lawrence stays healthy and can overcome the loss of, I'm blanking now, who went to the Broncos? Brandon Gregory. Yeah, geez, it's always Gregory for me. And then Michael Parsons, of course, he's an All-Pro, but like, isn't there going to be natural regression for him? And when I say that, it doesn't mean he's going to be like a worse player, but just statistically, I would imagine there will be some sort of regression for him because it would be hard for him to play any better. So knowing all that, knowing who was coached by the Cowboys, them getting to 11 would essentially be them being the one seed, right?
I don't know about them being the one seed in a 17-game schedule, but definitely winning the East. I'm kind of comfortable with it. Like, the whole Dak thing was so weird last year. Remember, he was playing banged up early on in the season, and he was still operating, you know, from the pocket like he was Drew Brees, right? And then he ended up having another injury, and it felt like it really just went downhill for him. If he can come back and he's fully healthy – I think he's up there with, you know, the other MVP type of candidate quarterbacks in this league. I think Dak's that good of a quarterback. Still going to have CD, still going to have Michael Gallup. We'll see about that backfield with Zeke and Tony Pollard and see how much, you know, RJ wants to pull his hair out about that.
Did you guys 17 see... games out of Tyron Smith?
Oh, dude, probably not. Like, right. But they just drafted Tyler Smith, who's like might be their left tackle moving forward. So I wouldn't discount that. Did you guys see that Fox, they announced – I don't know why the NFL is doing this. Like, each broadcast partner is announcing one game before the schedule release.
Very important.
Fox, gotta drag it out. Gotta drag it out for a week.
Fox announced Dallas going to Green Bay. Love that. Love that. Mike McCarthy, come on home.
Revenge, yeah.
Come here. I just want to talk, Mike. I just want to talk.
Dallas plus +3.
Oh, enough. Get out of here. The last time, remind you, the last time McCarthy was in Green Bay, he lost to Josh Rosen. That's how bad it was. Bad it was at the end.
Are there still any Mike McCarthy supporters in Green Bay? Like,
no, is there anybody who? Because they got LaFleur, and everyone's like, wait, I can't even. It's like the Kevin King thing. Like, the Packers fans will stand for the worst member of the organization, and then he'll get replaced by a good person. And then they're like, you know what? Rasul Douglas actually is like way better than Kevin King. Kevin King actually isn't an NFL quarterback. Yeah. No, we got LaFleur. We're very happy.
Yeah. So Mike McCarthy going home to Green Bay. So you got that to look forward to in the upcoming NFL season. The Philadelphia Eagles are projected 8.5 in the upcoming season. They're a curious team. So I'm not super confident that Dallas is going to reach that win total, but the Eagles, I kind of like the Eagles. You know, they add A.J. Brown, obviously, and they're giving Jalen Hurts an opportunity here. And we kind of saw how they figured things out late or down the back half of last season with their running game. And their running game was really good. And they were actually, like, putting up numbers. And I'm just curious about them. I don't think view them as, like, a team that we're sleeping on or anything like that in the NFC. But I do think that in that division where it's, I think it's just the Eagles and the Cowboys, like, I think they could be a problem.
Yeah. I think that the addition of AJ Brown will make Devonta Smith a lot better. So he doesn't have that pressure of being the number one in year two. He's not going to have coverage rolled to him. That's all going to be on AJ Brown. So I think their offense will take a step forward. But it's going to be about, like, how consistent is Jalen Hurts? Like, he is going to have to, you know, ascend, essentially. He's going to have to be way more consistent. He's going to have to be able to consistently throw the ball all over the field and not just to one portion of the field. You love what they did on just in the draft with N'Kobe Dean, with Jordan Davis. We're going to see if their secondary can hold up. You know, Darius Slay was good last year. But are you just going to pick on whoever's on the opposite side this year? But their front seven is probably going to be very good. And no, I agree with you. Just the way that they're built, you would think that they would have success. But I think, again, it's going to come down to, you know, what are we getting from Jalen Hurts? Is he going to take another step forward, or is he going to be the same inconsistent quarterback who I don't know if they fully trusted, and that played itself out? So we'll see. I mean, it's more of a coin flip, but it's also the NFC East. So they're not going to, you know, exactly be going against a murderer's row schedule.
Yeah, and I totally agree with you. It's Jalen Hurts has to take a step forward as a passer, but you hope that the addition of A.J. Brown and how talented he is as a player, like, that's going to make an impact. It's going to make a big impact, and I think it could open things up a lot for Devontae Smith. So hopefully having that athletic wide receiver who can go up and get a football, which is something they just didn't have last season, like, I think they had Jalen Reagor and Quez Watkins were like their other passing options outside of Dallas Goedert and Devontae Smith. So AJ Brown is a huge upgrade there. And if Jalen Hurts can take a step forward and be a more consistent passer, I think that offense has a chance to be a real problem.
Let me ask you this. 2023, is Jalen Hurts the starting quarterback for the Eagles?
Yes.
Justice?
We'll find out. I mean, This year's a referendum. Yeah, this year's a referendum on him. So I don't know. I mean, what, Russell turned down the opportunity to go there, right? They were interested in that. Didn't Deshaun turn down an opportunity with the Eagles? So it's not like they aren't poking around at quarterbacks. I think they brought in some guys on the, you know, the top 30 visits pre-draft. So they seem to be open about it. The one thing I will say about their win total, 8.5. You think it makes sense, right? You're like, okay, that number probably seems right. And then you're like, wait, are they only one win better than the Giants or the Commanders? And you're like, I don't know. They're probably more than one. Like, if Dak goes down with an injury or something, right, the Eagles instantly become the favorites in the East, like, by far, in my opinion.
Yeah, and the Giants are projected win total of 7 games. They're curious just because they have to have a better coaching situation, right? Like, Brian Daboll is definitively a better coaching situation than Joe Judge. And so now it's a matter of what he can get out of the players that they already had there. They just cut James Bradbury because Dave Gettleman screwed up their cap so much that they didn't even have enough money to sign their draft picks until they cut that guy, and they could not trade him because they just had absolutely no leverage. The Giants are curious, but then it comes back to, well, even if Brian Daboll is a better head coach, he is going to put Daniel Jones in better situations, but I'm still in no way confident that Daniel Jones is going to be good and like get you over the hump or anything, or make you competitive for the division. So I think that's probably right for the Giants, and I just don't have a lot of faith in them.
I'm fascinated to see, and I'm not going to compare, you know, him to Kyle Shanahan, but I'm fascinated to see what Daboll does with this roster over the next 3 years, because in my mind, he's brilliant. And I think he gets it, and I think you can tell that by the coaches that he brought in. And there are pieces on the roster already, but like, we know Daniel Jones isn't this guy, and he's not tied to Saquon Barkley. So the backfield is going to look a lot different. Like, Kenny Galladay, will he be there for the long term? I think what we're looking at in 2022 will be a lot different three years down the line. He's probably going to have a plan for Wandale Robinson. They have the book and tackle that they just drafted in Evan Neal. Kayvon Thibodeau, he's going to be a star in my mind. So you have that pass rusher to build off and build around. And then, again, as I said, like, there are a bunch of other pieces that you can win with on the roster. So it probably won't be instant, but I think down the line the Giants will threaten.
Yeah, I think this is just a team in a year one rebuild, right? I mean, they're trying to pressure wash all of the Gettleman stink off of them. They just released Bradbury recently too. Bradbury's probably going to be a starting cornerback for someone else in the league this year. There was the whole draft week rumor about, like, Kadarius Toney is on the block. He's available if, you know, at the right price or whatever. They turned down the Daniel Jones' option. They don't seem like they want to extend Saquon. Like, this just seems like a team that's in transition. I wouldn't make too much of them until next year. I think they're more talented than they were last year. I think they have a better coaching staff. But the one thing I will say about Daboll, I mean, so Daboll came from college coaching, right? Then he was in the booth for the Buffalo Bills, and now he's going to be an on-field coach running everything as, like, an administrator head coach. So I think there's probably going to be a learning curve there. With that being said, like, I don't think this year is a referendum on the Giants at all. Like, if they went 2-15 because of some weird quarterback situation, like Jones gets injured again and they have to play these backups again, right? Like, I don't think anyone is blaming them or losing, I guess, confidence in the staff.
Would we all agree that it's more than likely the Giants don't win 7 games?
Yeah.
I've seen Daniel Jones play quarterback, so yeah, I'm going to have to, like...
When you say 2-15, I just thought of, like, Daniel Jones just playing. Like, there's nothing has to happen. He can just be under center and have to throw the ball.
That defense also, like, is still lacking a lot. Like, I know Thibodeau's going to bring some pass rushing power to that team, but up front, I still worry a lot about what they could do on the edges. You know,
they just released their best player. Arguably their best player.
Yes. It's tough. And, like, Adoree is so weird because he's a great cover corner, but, like, if you play him in the red zone, you can, like, block him through the back of the end zone. Like, you can get him through the tunnel. So, like, you get in the red zone, you can pretty much score touchdowns on this team. So, I don't know. It's going to be a weird one. I think, again, just don't make too much out of this Giants team. I don't think Giants fans are going to make too much out of this Giants team. They're probably just going to be happy with any of the results that come this year.
So we all agree that it's at least going to be challenging for the Giants to get to that 7 number, to get to 7 right. wins on the season. What about the Commanders? Like, do we think the Giants are the worst team in the AFC East or the Washington Commanders are? Because they go out, they get Carson Wentz, and they do have some talented players. They're going to get Chase Young back this upcoming season, and hopefully he's healthy. We saw what he did as a rookie. But overall, as an organization, as a franchise, just as a team, like, it doesn't feel like they have any idea what direction they're headed in. Ron Rivera, I like as a person, but I don't love him as a head coach. And I just don't think that Carson Wentz is going to give you anything that's really all that much better than what you got from Taylor Heinicke last year. Like, it's going to be better because he can make some other throws, but I don't trust Carson Wentz in any way.
What does Ron Rivera do? Like, why does he keep getting the benefit of the doubt? I am extremely high, like incredibly high on Jahan Dotson. I think he is going to be very good. I don't know that you like if I'm tying his reputation to Carson Wentz, that is terrifying. Like, that's not what I want if I'm betting on, you know, prospect to turn out. But, like, again, they're a team that has pieces. Like, I can see Dotson. I De'Ami Brown from last year. I think Terry McLaurin's a good receiver. I don't know if McLaurin's going to be in their future plans. Like, who knows? He has an extension coming up that they have to figure out. On the other side of the ball, like, I think Will Jackson is a competent cornerback. Like, they have the pieces. Obviously, their defensive line. But, again, their quarterback, man. Like, it always comes back to the quarterback. And, like, did they make enough moves along the offensive line to shore that up? Like, what is their offense going to consist of? And it always comes back to, will Wentz be healthy? Will Wentz be consistent? Both of those are probably not going to happen because we have a lot of evidence that over the course of the season, you know, over the course of his career, they haven't happened. So with Rivera and Wentz running the show, under.
This is also going to be a weird situation for Wentz because both of the spots that he had been in before, you know, Indianapolis, Philadelphia, they've been tight end heavy. Right. And you look at how Washington uses their offense. I know a lot of people probably aren't watching Washington super closely. They're probably as close to the Arizona Cardinals schematically as any team in the league, just in terms of like how spread and how light they are. Like they play like a ton of like 11 personnel stuff with like one of these quote unquote tight ends that aren't actual tight ends as like the sniffer and lining up real wide. Like Terry, Dotson, Samuel, De'Ami Brown, those are small receivers, dude. Like they don't have like any of these big guys. So Carson Wentz is basically going to have to operate in like a true spread. How's that going to work? I don't know that that's going to work. Jack Del Rio had that mismatched secondary last year where like they had good role players, but like all the role players were like, none of it was cohesive. None of it could like play together. So I don't know.
Not sold on Logan Thomas?
No. I'm not sold on Logan Thomas as a full-time tight end. I'm not. I'm sorry. You got to play Y at least a little bit in the NFL. I'm definitely way more team under on Washington than any of the other NFC East teams.
Yeah, I think I'd agree there.
To KP's point, though, where he's like, Ron Rivera, why does he keep getting chances? I feel like Washington's been busy. I think ownership has been caught up in stuff. I don't know if this was on the top of their priorities.
Yeah, that's... Yeah, I think Ron Rivera's good. Ron Rivera still has like some leeway, I think. Like I think he could be bad next season and he's still not getting fired. So yeah, I'm going under on the Washington Commanders as well. Moving on to the NFC North, Green Bay Packers, of course, sit atop the division with an 11 total win projection.
Too low.
I think that's right. I think I'd go over. You know, the questions with Aaron Rodgers, wide receivers are there, but it's Aaron Rodgers.
Back-to-back MVP.
So, I still have faith that Aaron's going to be a really good quarterback, and he's got good coaching staff and all that stuff around him. So, I think the Packers are still going to be a really good football team.
Before Justice goes on a ramble that is probably not going to make much sense about the Packers, I want to tell you the reason the Packers might go over their win total will not be because of their offense. I think on the other side of the ball, they have a chance to be quite good. And, you know, the additions of, you know, the Georgia guys in the first round doesn't hurt. Championship caliber players who can run and are aggressive and are athletic and can make your defense multiple with a defensive coordinator who wants to be multiple, good sign. So the fits stand out. They have a really freaking good secondary. So I did not think Eric Stokes was – a first round worthy pick last year, and that was wrong, and that proved to be wrong very quick. But there's so the best defenses in the NFL have really good safety play. The Packers have really good, like Adrian Amos is a lot better than people think. And then Savage, I think he's still getting better, and would not surprise me if he had like a top five safety type of season. And then now they're gonna have Jair all season, and having Jair on the opposite side of Eric Stokes, like that'll be good. And I don't know I'm not going to pretend to know who their slot cornerback is, but they have speed at the second level. I think bringing back, they signed Campbell to a big deal, right? So bringing back him was smart. And then him playing alongside Quay Walker. And then, you know, again, just along the defensive line, whether it's Kenny Clark, whether it's Preston Smith, just having guys who can win against the run and the pass, like they're going to be tough on that side, which takes pressure off of Aaron Rodgers having to score 25, 28, 30 points a game. So I don't think the Packers are going to be winning those high scoring games, but I think they will win a lot. And it'll be because of what they do on the defense, man. And I don't know if Joe Barry's going to be able to parlay this into a head coaching job, but he has the talent on that side of the ball to at least get interviews next year.
Top five defense, back-to-back MVP quarterback, top five offensive line, two NFL starting running backs. How is this team going to score? I can't believe we're doing this. They're going to win 13 games. They always win 13 games. LaFleur has won less than 13 games. This is what they're going to do. KP, you talked about Darnell Savage, and your talking point on him was, you know, he's getting better. He can have, you know, a top five safety type of season. He might be the weakest guy in their nickel defense. Like Jair's probably going to play the slot. You got Rasul and Stokes outside. Crazy. That's crazy. I don't think people realize how athletic this defense is going to be and what the things that they can do, because they can get into the penny front. They can get into the nickel front stuff. This is going to be a really fun season as long as these guys can stay healthy. The problem is going to be depth, right? Like, you look at depth at cornerback and you're like, one of these guys goes down, who comes in? You're like, Shamar John Charles in his second year after being drafted in day three. And you're like, that's where the team can lose games defensively.
So take the over on the Green Bay Packers, 11 total wins. The Minnesota Vikings, next team in the division, they're projected 9 wins. And I guess I feel like that's probably on par with what you expect to get from the Minnesota Vikings. They are kind of rebuilding that defense. They add Lewisine in the draft. They bring in Za'Darius Smith. They're going to get Danielle Hunter back. And, you know, those guys are playmakers who are going to give you valuable snaps on the defensive side of the ball. They still got Dalvin Cook. They still got Justin Jefferson. They still got Kirk Cousins, if you have any faith in him as a quarterback, but he is a solid NFL starter. I don't know. This one feels a little iffy to me, though, because I feel like the Vikings are still good. They still have a lot of talent. They're another one of those teams, though, that's just kind of like, where are we trying to go here? We've got a new coaching staff, but we also have some veterans that you might be a little bit worried about, like, you know, long-term future plans.
Yeah, so they went 8-9 last year, but during last month of the season, they were pretty much locked into that 7 seed in the playoffs, and then they just went full Vikings at the end of the season. But so 8-9, but they lost to the Lions. And they had so many close games, so I don't know which regression you're leaning as far as the Vikings go. There's always a Kirk Cousins question. It's like, what are you going to get out of him? But I thought they did a good job of – so Lewis Cine, all everything. Andrew Booth, hopefully he's healthy. So that gives their secondary, which is where they lacked at. Teams picked on them over and over and over again because they had guys who could not cover. Mike Zimmer cannot do what he wants to do on defense when you have guys who cannot cover one-on-one on the outside. So they tackled that. They nailed that down. It's a bit of a projection to expect a rookie to come in and be able to perform right away. But eventually, those two will be easy upgrades in the secondary. And I think, you know, along the defensive line, adding Za'Darius Smith, that's going to be a great addition. So will Adam Thielen stay healthy? Justin Jefferson's going to be one of the best wide receivers in the NFL. Will Kirk Cousins be able to get him the ball? Will Dalvin Cook be able to give you, you know, 12, 15 games in that range? That's what you're hoping for if you're going to bet this over. What would be a reason you bet the under in this one, Justice?
It's the defense. I mean, I just want to see how it meshes. Like, I feel like we're going to get a pretty easy tell early on if it's going to go over or under. You already brought up, you know, Cine, Booth. I mean, Cine, the Dallas Cowboys, that leaked board came out, right? And Cine was like the last first round grade that the Dallas Cowboys had available, and they ended up going offensive line instead of taking a safety. I just want to see what like Za'Darius has in the tank. I want to see what Andrew Booth looks like. I want to see what Shannon Sullivan looks like when he doesn't have, you know, all these long, lengthy corners playing on the outside of him. That's kind of my big, like the questions I need answered, I guess, because their interior defensive line isn't great, right? Like outside of Dalvin Tomlinson, they don't have a bunch of guys in the middle. So if they're weak on an edge and Za'Darius doesn't look like what Za'Darius was in Green Bay because of that back injury, remember he played like 30 snaps the entire season with week one in the playoff game. So yeah, it's not like we have a huge tell on who these guys are right now.
I don't blame them for signing Za'Darius though.
No. I think they took they took some pretty high – like Andrew Booth would have been the third cornerback drafted if he were healthy. Za'Darius mm-hmm. Smith is a contender for defensive player of the year. It's just like, okay, now we got to see it, right? Like that's my whole thing with them. I probably wouldn't bet on the Vikings win total until I see those guys on the field. Like it might be them winning the NFC North odds depending on what they are, or like them making the playoffs in September – after you get, you know, two games under these guys. Like, I think that's kind of my approach on Minnesota.
It feels like it's the same questions that we have about the Vikings every year. Like, if they win the tight games, they could easily win 12 games, or they could do what they did last year and go 8-9. Like, they're just a really hard team to predict, and some of that is probably on Kirk Cousins. But we'll see. The last two teams in the North, the Chicago Bears and the Detroit Lions, both set at 6.5 wins. I don't know how you guys feel about this. I think the Lions win more games than the Bears and this upcoming season, and I'm pretty confident about it.
I don't even think we need to waste time on that, because if you would pick the Bears based on what they've done this offseason and based on what the Lions have done this offseason, you probably live in Chicago and own a Bears jersey. Like, that would be the only explanation for that. The Bears hate Justin Fields. Let's just get that out of the way.
It's true.
He needs to hold out for a guaranteed contract, man. Like, what are they doing to this guy? Let me read their depth chart on offense. Darnell Mooney, fifth round pick in 2020.
170 pounds.
Yeah. St. Brown from the Packers is their wide receiver too right now. He could not get on the field for Green Bay, man. And they were looking for wide receivers when they were hurt, like when they had a bunch of guys banged up. Byron Pringle, Steve, you are well aware of who that is. That is their slot receiver right now. That's who Justin Fields has to throw the ball to. And of course, they drafted a wide receiver in the third round who is older than every other prospect ever.
It's his birthday today. Round of applause. Happy birthday.
To the 25-year-old third-round pick. Yep, congrats. They let their best lineman go, probably, James Daniels. Tevin Jenkins, who knows what you're going to get out of him. On the other side of the ball, love Brisker, love Gordon. Yep. Their defense is probably going to be fine. But I don't know if they're going to have more than five games where they score 20 points, man. Like, it's going to be a struggle to consistently move the ball. And when you can't consistently move the ball on offense and you don't have explosive plays, what are you going to do, man? Because that's how offenses roll. Like, you are either high variance and you live off explosive plays, or you're just consistent down to down and you play the field position game, blah, blah. That's not what the Bears are. And I don't know what the Bears are. I don't know what their direction is. But under hammer.
I am praying on Justin Fields' downfall, right? Because I'm a Packers fan. I like Justin Fields. I think he was a very talented player coming out of the draft. I think he probably was underdrafted coming out. This feels like mission accomplished, and he hasn't even started his second season in the league, right? Like, that's how bad they've managed this roster around him. As far as Detroit goes, I mean, they just added Aiden Hutchinson and Josh Paschal. That's crazy. They traded up. They basically gave up not very much to move up 20 spots and draft Jameson Williams. We'll see if he's going to be ready week one, but whenever he's on the field, he's going to be a beast for them. Love in dome, move. On turf. Like, this team is just moving in the right direction. Big Dan the Man Campbell stan at this point. So,
yeah, I was trying to think of a year that the Lions had, and I couldn't think of one where, like, man, they crushed the draft. Man, Dan Campbell's actually an exciting head coach. It seems like the players absolutely love him. They totally overperformed last year. And, like, Lions fans should actually be kind of excited for the upcoming season. And Bears fans should not be, because they've just done nothing for Justin Fields. And it's devastating to somebody who wants to see him be successful.
The one thing I will say too, right? Like, they're going to be the Hard Knocks team. Like, if you want to bet the over on Detroit, you should probably do it before the Hard Knocks stuff, because I can only imagine this team is going to get some hype after that.
It'll be easy to root for, I imagine, after we get a behind the curtain look at what Dan Campbell does. So on offense, they were so slow, like molasses slow, and they went and got Jameson Williams and DJ Shark. I think Jameson Williams has a chance to be one of the best receivers in the draft. And, like, who knows when he plays
in the league? But, like, he's so fast.
So I don't know. He obviously didn't run because he was hurt, but he probably would have ran a 4.2. And a lot of that gets thrown around a lot, but he legitimately plays that fast. And there are games, like, you can watch his highlights, but when you're running away from 4.3 guys, you can fly. And I don't think there's going to be any hesitation for him to produce. Like, yeah, like his quarterback, but even their other draft picks. So, like, Kirby Joseph, like, for what Aaron Glenn wants to do in that defense, like, he needs a center fielder. And Kirby Joseph is a quality center fielder at safety. Yeah, they have talent, man. Or last year's draft was solid too. So they're just bringing in talent. And now next is knock out the quarterback, which is next year, man. So there's a plan in place, and not a lot of teams can say that. So I feel like the Lions get credit for that.
Yeah, it's a weird world where we're actually excited for Detroit Lions football. But let's take a quick timeout. And when we get back, we will run through the win totals for the NFC South and the NFC West. That's coming up next on NFL University.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Support for this show comes from Art, Beats, and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Colt Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art Beats and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual past while also revealing their distinct roles within Art Beats and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari, W., and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art Beats and Lyrics now on Hulu. Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.
Welcome back into NFL University. I'm Steven Serta of Arrowhead Pride, joined as always by Kyle Posey of Niners Nation, as well as Justice Mosqueda of Acme Packing Co. We pick things back up in the NFC South. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers, 11.5 projected wins. Tom Brady's back, running it back for another season again with that roster for the most part. They're hands down the best team in the division. So I'm going to go over on the 11.5 win total.
I don't know. I don't know where I would go here.
Doubting Tom Brady. Oh,
it is incredible how you can.
It's easy. No, don't doubt Tom Brady. He's done
this
too many times.
I'm not doubting Tom Brady. No chance I will ever do that, because you're just betting against history. I don't know. That number in general is high for me. Even when we're talking about Green Bay, like, I would be hesitant to bet any team over 11 just because there's a lot of luck that's involved in a lot of these games. And some games come down to coin flip. And just like one slip up, one or two slip ups in a season, and there goes your win total. So it's not that I'm betting against Tom Brady or the Bucs in general. I know that they're good. I know that they're loaded. I know they have a ton of talent on both sides of the ball. 11 is just high for me. But, like, again, like Vita Vea, Joe Tryon, like, these are guys that on defense, they are very, very good. Carlton Davis. I love that they brought him back. I think Antoine Winfield's going to be better. You just go down the line. Like, what do we get from Mike Evans? Like, Chris Godwin, will that affect the offense just not being there? So we'll see how they look early on, but like, they're going to be a playoff team. It's just like, will they reach 11? Like, that's my question, because of saying Godwin is worth 2-3 wins is probably not fair, but when you only have one threat, it'll be a lot easier for defense to guard them. I'll say
the big thing for me was just guard play, right? Like, once they had that retirement happen to them, I was like, oh, well, what are they going to do? Well, they trade for Shaq Mason. They draft Luke Goedeke in the second round. Those two guys are going to be pretty good for them. And they grab Cade Otton. He's a true Y from Washington in the fourth round. At the very least, what he's going to be able to do is block guys. So if they can't get a Rob Gronkowski who can, return and contribute on both sides, or like both aspects of the offensive game, at least you can get a run blocking guy. You can still run like the a power pass, like play action stuff that Tom Brady loves. They drafted Logan Hall in the second round, first pick of the second round. I thought he was BPA on the board. I think he's going to be a beast. Real bummer, because unfortunately, I think the Buccaneers are going to be as good or better than they were last year. And remember, I mean, their season ended with that like super improbable run at the end of that playoff game against the Rams, where it seemed like they had it locked up, and then Stafford just had like the biggest moment of his career. So if that doesn't happen, maybe Brady wins another ring, right? Like, who knows?
Bucks onesie?
No, the Packers. Top five defense, back-to-back MVP quarterback.
Yeah, I was just making sure, man. I can never keep up.
Firm two seed.
Yeah, I'm just never going to bet against Tom Brady. Like, he could easily just win another Super Bowl and then just ride off into the sunset and jump in the broadcast booth, make all this money. It's just seen it too many times. But the New Orleans Saints are projected at 8 wins. They're another team that I think is tough for me. They obviously view themselves, and we've talked about it on this show, as a team that can contend. And I still think they've got enough talent to do that in a weak division and the easier of the conferences. But I'm not placing an over bet on the New Orleans Saints with any kind of confidence, especially because Jameis, and I want to see Jameis just sling it and go nuts and kind of, you know, let that leash off of him that he had last year with Sean Payton, but it's also Jameis, and I don't have any faith that he could like lead you to 10 wins.
They got a nice compliment for Michael Thomas, and you know, who knows what we get from Michael Thomas, but Chris Olave and Michael Thomas on the field will be fine. What to make of Trevor Penning? That is the question, because if he does not pan out, they will have problems and problems in a hurry. I'm actually not too worried about Jameis. I think Jameis will be fine. I think Dennis Allen calling the shots still on defense, I think they're going to be a good unit. But like, if a lot hinges on Penning, which probably isn't fair to him, but just if you look at the roster, how it's constructed, he better be good.
It'll be interesting. The offensive line is a bigger issue than I think people realize. Like, people look at that and say, you know, high draft picks all across the board, but Penning, like you mentioned, is a pretty volatile player. We'll see if he got that cleaned up. But like Andres Pete, he's pretty up and down for a guard, right? He was drafted in the first round and got a second contract. Cesar Ruiz is another guy who, like, you know, you thought he was really good coming out. He's been a little bit up and down. Like, McCoy and Ramchick are the two guys you can lock down, and then the rest of the guys are a little bit roller coaster. So you give me a roller coaster offensive line, Jameis Winston, Michael Thomas with everything that's coming off of the Michael Thomas, and then Chris Olave's speed on turf in the dome. This is going to be a fun team to watch at the very least. Like, they're going to be pretty chaotic. I don't know how good they're going to be, though.
Pete started 6 games last year.
He's always banged up.
Yeah.
Always banged up.
I just want them to be fun. You know, based on the way things ended last year after Jameis got hurt and we got Taysom Hill, like, there's enough pieces on this team for them to be fun. And with Jameis, I hope that they are fun. So that's really all I'm hoping to see out of the Saints in the upcoming season. Last two teams in the NFC South, the Carolina Panthers are projected 6 total wins, the Atlanta Falcons at 5 total wins. Do either of these teams get to those totals? Because I'm not confident that either of them is going to be there.
No, I mean, so Carolina, the one addition that they brought in the draft really was Ike Ekwonu. Their next pick after that was Matt Corral. And, like, who knows if he's going to start. If he does, that could be a bad time, you know, rookie year. Like, maybe no one has a bigger jump than Matt Corral going from his system at Ole Miss to, you know, what they have going on in the NFL right now. And then Atlanta, I actually think, like, the Ridder thing should actually hurt their win total. You think about how these rookie quarterbacks typically pan out. Like, if Ridder plays, he's probably going to be, you know, one of the worst 5 quarterbacks in the league, which with this roster around him is probably going to put out, you know, pretty terrible passing game production, you know, and that's just kind of what it is. Like, there's nothing that you can really blame either side about. So I'm team double under here. Like, this is one of the reasons why I think Tampa is going to win so many games is because they get these two teams 4 times.
I think there's a good chance that Tampa wins more games than both these two teams combined.
I don't think that's crazy at all. No faith in either of these teams, and we'll see how the schedules play out. I know the Panthers, what did they start, like 3-0 last year or 3-1? And Sam Darnold.
Oh, everyone's talking about the defense.
Yeah.
Oh, Phil Snow's defense coming from the college level, and then it just collapses.
Yeah, then it all just fell apart. So, yeah, no faith in either of these teams. So let's move on to the NFC West. Defending Super Bowl champions, Los Angeles Rams, projected 10.5 wins. How do you guys feel about the defending champions at 10.5? I still think that they're going to be really good. They've still made some key additions. I still think that Allen Robinson's got a lot left in the tank. I think that he just was totally disinterested playing in Chicago last year. And I think that's actually going to be a huge addition for this offense when you add him into the mix with Cooper Kupp.
Yeah, I agree, man. I think we're going to see. So Allen Robinson's been this player that's been hyped essentially all his career. And he gets the benefit of the doubt because of the quarterbacks that he's played with, which is fair. But there have been some seasons where he's been underwhelming. Last year, when you say disinterested, like, it felt like he was just, like, walking on the field. Like, he just didn't want to be there, and it was so clear. So I don't think we can really judge Allen Robinson as a player last year. So you have him, Van Jefferson, Cooper Kupp, and Matthew Stafford in the second season of Sean McVay's game. So I think Stafford's going to be even better than he was last year. I remember, like, down – I think – it was either the middle season or late season. He had the stretch where it was like pick six, pick six, pick six. that's not going to happen again with Matt Stafford. I don't think so anyway. So there are a couple question marks on defense. Like they lost some competent players that you can rely on, but I think the offense takes another step. So that'll be able to mask some of their defensive issues. But I would probably go over here. I think the Rams are going to be one of the better teams in the NFL.
I am firmly stay away from the Rams because they're very talented. But when people talk about Super Bowl hangover, I think these guys might still actually be hungover from the Super Bowl. Like, they're just drunk talking crap about a Bill Belichick pick. They're jumping into pools because they drafted Logan Bruss two rounds too early in the third round. Like, just very weird stuff. The A-Rob thing, I don't know if I would have had the stomach to give him that contract after, you know, his last season in Chicago. You're paying him the same amount of money as Cooper Kupp, right? It just seems like they just went into, like, let's not use a whole lot of brain power this offseason. Like, let's just lock down, like, three different things and just run it back. And I don't know. We'll see. I'm just not super comfortable with it. The other thing, too, is, like, is Cam Akers going to look okay? Because they still seem to, like, not want to feed Daryl Henderson. Cam Akers averaged, like, less than 2 yards per carry in the playoff run. I don't know. If they can't run the ball at all, I mean, at some point, don't you just start squatting on this stuff? Like, Odell Beckham Jr. brought them a good amount of firepower from, like, a speed perspective at the very least. Like, if your only speed is coming from Van Jefferson, we saw what happened to the Rams before then, right? Like, if you don't have the consistency of Robert Woods, if Allen Robinson can't be Robert Woods and Van Jefferson can't give you the speed of Odell Beckham Jr., or at least the threat of that, then, like, I don't know. How good does that passing offense look?
Yeah, I still think that this offense is going to be plenty explosive. And the Cam Akers one, I think, is important and curious to see. You know, he did rush back from that Achilles injury, so we'll see how healthy he is headed into next season. And maybe that was something of, you know, coming back from the injury so quick that, you know, maybe he wasn't quite as explosive as he was prior to the injury. Because, I mean, doing it in the same calendar season is a really quick turnaround for that type of injury. So we'll see there. But I still like the Rams quite a bit. San Francisco 49ers are at 10 total wins. Obviously, last season, they go 10-7. They needed to kind of go on a run there at the end of the season to make the playoffs, but then they go on the run to the NFC title game. I still think that the 49ers have one of the best rosters overall in the NFL, as long as it stays intact before we get to week one. The question is, I guess, just how confident you are in Trey Lance, or whether it's for whatever reason, Jimmy G, however this plays out. Like, I still think the 49ers are going to be a really, really good team in the NFC. And if the Rams do take a step back, I think that they are the best team in that division.
Justice, thoughts on the 49ers?
My thoughts on the 49ers, like, this is another stay away from me at 10. The Kyle Shanahan factor cannot be underrated here. He is a genius in terms of scheming up stuff offensively. He can do all the auxiliary runs, all the auxiliary motions to kind of put window dressing on everything. If for some reason Deebo Samuel is traded and they do something weird, like just like, hey, we're going to run it back with Jimmy, I could see them just like being like the locker room team for this year. And just like Kyle kind of like losing the confidence in this team. So I don't want to touch it. I don't want to touch it with the 10-foot pole. Keep me away from this team until like at least November, because it seems like they just try to like – they're just going through the motions and trying to find themselves up until that point.
So it's probably going to be Lance. And when you have a rookie quarterback, no matter what his surroundings are, winning 10 games is going to be very hard, man. And they're going to have – so they're going to be in the spotlight. I think there's no doubt about it. They're going to be on national TV all over because people are going to want to see, hey – how does Kyle Shanahan deal with Trey Lance? And remember that, like, their defense was really good last year, and they're going to be better with some of the additions that they're made. But again, it's going to come down to Lance. Like, is he good? And I don't think he's going to be consistent. I think he's going to be like a high variance type of quarterback. And when you have a high variance type of quarterback, those mistakes can add up. So I would probably go under. I would go closer to, I would bet it if it was 9. So I would go under since it's 10. Again, just rookie quarterback, man. Like, the expectations for him are through the roof. You're seeing some stats people are projecting him that just, like, they don't make sense. Like, that's not what rookie quarterbacks do, man. They throw a lot of interceptions, they have turnovers, and they make knuckleheaded decisions. That's just what every rookie quarterback does, no matter how highly touted they were coming out. And it's probably not going to be any different for Trey Lance, who eventually will probably be very good, but expecting him to be a top seven quarterback in the NFL next year, like, that's not fair to him and just not very realistic.
Yeah, but Patrick Mahomes threw for 5,000 yards and 50 touchdowns his first year as a starter. So yes, everyone expects Trey Lance to do that too. Yes, that's just what you do.
You got any of those Tyreek Hills hanging out there?
Tyreon Davis Price. Is he in the doghouse yet? We got to get doghouse status on him, like, weekly updates. So he's the running back out of LSU who people thought was, like, going to be like a 6th round pick. He ended up getting drafted in 3rd round by the Niners. Obviously the Niners didn't have a 1st round pick, so it went Drake Jackson, the pass rusher out of USC, then the speedy running back out of LSU, which just seems very Kyle Shanahan. Like, he made that pick, right?
Oh, 100%.
Which means that he's going to be pissed at him within the month. So I need the update, KP.
So he made that pick because Elijah Mitchell doesn't have any leg drive, doesn't have power, and can't stay healthy. So what does he do? He drafts a running back who is fast and over 220 pounds. That's it. That's all the criteria that needed to be met. And Kyle Shanahan did what Kyle Shanahan does. Probably said no to like 14 different scouts and said, I'm going to make this pick. It's my team. My name is on the logo. So we're going to do it.
So this is why I can't trust this team. This happens consistently with this team. I can't do it.
Yeah, I've never seen a coach who gets so mad at his players like Kyle Shanahan. That
within
just
like two.
I'll practices. Jeopardize winning. I'll jeopardize winning to prove to you that I dislike you right now.
He had Ayuk on like the bench for like a year and a half.
Trent Sherfield was catching comebacks, baby.
Yeah, unreal. But the Arizona Cardinals, they are projected 9 total wins. Coming off an 11-win season, I got no faith in the Cardinals. None. I think that they've gotten worse since last season. And, you know, Justice has mentioned it several times on the pod. Kyler Murray struggles to stay healthy. I don't think he's somebody that you can rely on late in the season. So I am just not confident in the Cardinals at all.
So Kyler, without D-Hop for 6 games, and their win total is 9? How are they going to get there? Is AJ Green going to stay healthy? Is he going to morph into the AJ Green of 2016, 2015? Is Hollywood Brown going to be this deep threat who, you know, clicks with Kyler? Remember, like, so I believe Rodney Hudson missed a few games last year, and he's an all-pro. Like, I'm not taking that away from him, but, like, if I were to ask you guys, could you name the tackles for the Cardinals? Could you? Because they are going to be in some trouble.
And yeah, I'm looking at their R-lads, so I can. But yeah, but even beyond their tackles, like, Will Hernandez was not good. Agreed. Will Hernandez was not good with the Giants last year. He seems like he seems to get worse. Like, every season he's in the league for whatever reason. And it's not like Cliff Kingsbury is known for developing offensive linemen or anything. So I don't know. I don't like this. This team has terrible vibes all over it.
Chandler Jones.
Yeah, the worst part for Cardinals fans is, like, everyone just got extended. Everyone other than Kyler, who's like the key that makes this engine go. And it's like, oh man, well, we might have made a huge mistake. Like, they drafted Trey McBride in the 2nd round. Trey McBride is not a true Y. Like, he's an F to me. The fact that, like, you're gonna pair that with Zach Ertz when you're pretty much, you know, 11 personnel team anyway, like, you can go back and watch that Packers Cardinals game. And the Cardinals come out in 12 personnel, which is 2 tight ends. The Packers are stopping them in nickel because they don't have, like, an actual tight end on the field. Like, they're lining up wide receivers and tight end positions, basically, and they just doubled down on it, and they spent money on it. And it's like, guys, you needed to get bigger than Trey McBride at tight end and Hollywood Brown at receiver. Like, you can't just keep doing this.
The Cardinals were chasing tight end production for years with guys like Dan Arnold, and then they finally trade for Zach Ertz and pay him and then draft another tight end. It doesn't make any sense to me. Yeah, I have no faith in the Arizona Cardinals in the upcoming season. I think it's going to be a down year, but hey, they still have J.J. Watt. The Seattle Seahawks.
You wasted another one of your years, Kyler.
at 5.5 projected wins. Any confidence, Pete Carroll, this loaded running back room, and Drew Lock or Geno Smith, combination of the both, any chance that that team gets over 5.5 wins this season?
The sweet, sweet irony of drafting a left tackle early in the draft after your franchise quarterback walks out of the door is so Pete Carroll. And it's probably to run the ball, and Charles Cross is known as a pass protector, which makes it even better. I don't think so, man. Like, who are we talking about? We're talking about Geno Smith and Drew Lock. That's the quarterback battle. Think the world of DK Metcalf. Think the world of Tyler Lockett. Cross is probably going to be a good player. And actually, I think Kenny Walker is going to be good for them. But getting to 6 wins, like, it'll be tough. They're going to have to get some West Virginia Geno games to reach that 6, to reach that win total. I don't see it, man. I actually think Quandre Diggs is a really good safety too. But who are they relying on? Like, think about their pass rush. Their big move was to bring in, like, Uchenna Nwosu.
Boye Mafe in the second round. Like 25-year-old
Boye Mafe, who I don't know how much you watched of him, but I think I watched 2 or 3 games, and I could have probably noted like 5 or 6 times where he started one place and he ended up in another, and not in a good way. They did not have any problems moving him. I struggle to see it with him as a prospect. I know he got a lot of hype, but I think he was probably overdrafted, and he's gonna have a tough time winning early on in the NFL, I would imagine.
It is funny about the tackles, though, that you brought that up. So, like, Charles Cross, right, came out of the air raid system. He's their left tackle, was drafted in the first round. Abraham Lucas, drafted in the third round, played the old school run and shoot. Like, an offense that is basically like the way of the dinosaur because of how often they throw it. And those are the guys that they bring in. I don't know. I just kind of think, like, I know all the talk in Seattle right now is like, we're not reloading, or we're not rebuilding, we're reloading. Like, we're going to compete this year, and, you know, this team is good enough. And it's like, dude, you have Drew Lock under center. Like, I'll see you next season. Like, this is the team that if, like, a Lamar Jackson or someone, right, like, gets mad and ends up demanding a trade and gets traded to the NFC, like, this is, like, the best landing spot, right? Like, what other team can you recruit to that has DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, 2 tackles, and, you know, a staff that very obviously wants to invest in the defensive side of the ball? I think they're more in that, like, that range where it's like, don't think about me until a quarterback becomes available on the market, than a team that's like actually interesting. It's almost like the Broncos last season, right? As ironically as that is.
Yeah. As someone who lives in Kansas City, and Drew Lock is a native Kansas Cityan, saw him play at Mizzou, saw him play for the Denver Broncos. Like, I don't think you can in good conscience have any confidence that he's going to get you over 5.5 wins in the upcoming season. So no, I'm going to go under there with the Seattle Seahawks. I totally agree with you guys. But
what round was Lock drafted? Was he a second rounder?
Second.
Yeah.
Early second. Packers wanted to take him in the first, I think. It was the Kevin King pick.
Yeah, the Broncos passed on him in the first round and then scooped him up in the second round. They might have traded up for him. I don't know. I might be misremembering. I don't remember. It was Drew Lock. Whatever. But thank you guys for listening to this edition of NFL University. Please make sure you subscribe, rate, and review everything that we're doing on the SB Nation NFL show. It is slowing down as the NFL reaches the summer, but we're still going to be putting out plenty of stuff for you guys to check out on the channel. So please make sure you're tuned in right there. You can follow Kyle Posey on Twitter at KP_show. You can follow Justice Mosqueda at JUMOSQ. I'm Steven Serta. That's where you can find me. We'll talk to you guys soon.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Support for this show comes from Art Beats and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Coke Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art Beats and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual past while also revealing their distinct roles within art, beats, and lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art, Beats, and Lyrics now on Hulu.
Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.